a Canadian athlete you know very well. He's had a big couple of years. And we'll talk strictly NBA. I'm serious when I say that. I'm going to talk just NBA with our next guest. Because he can handle himself. We got him, Azza. NBA analyst Milos Raonic joining us here on Tim and Sid. Milos, how you doing?
Let's not forget I'm a tennis player, but I do love the NBA.
Well, I'm just, listen, this is NBA first. For the record, you play tennis?
11 months out of the year.
There you go.
This is my crunch week on the NBA talk show host.
There you go. Well, I mean, the last time you were on, you crushed it. Everyone's like, well, I mean, ditch all other NBA analysts because Milos is your guy. So that's the focus I would like to take. And considering the Raptors could go to 13-2 tonight, I'd like to get your take on them. Will they win tonight in Atlanta, Milos Raonic?
I think so. I think it's hard, really, to put anything. Doesn't matter who they face. Put anything against the Raptors. I think right now the biggest danger to the Raptors is a team that plays very physical and that sort of can maybe keep them under 80 points, and it's a team like Chicago.
Does Chicago scare you without Derrick Rose, Milos Raonic?
Yeah, they do, because Chicago is is like the David Ferrer of basketball.
Oh, give him horns.
About their work and they get the job done and they do a very good job.
Hey, David Ferrer comparison. That is bringing all worlds together, Milos Raonic, yeah. Here on Tim and Sid. You were courtside Monday night, correct?
Yes.
How do they look to you?
They look great. I love that spot that Lou Williams likes to manipulate. Comes up on the sideline, on the baseline, and he's making the most out of that. They looked smooth. Kyle Lowry proved like a champ to step up two times in the game where he got that block, that rebound, and that steal within 13 seconds. And then after that, to get that steal to tip off at the end of the game was very big for us.
Do you think depth is as important in any other sport besides basketball, or is depth as important in basketball compared to any other sport, considering the bench isn't big? I mean, if you can go 10 deep and you can do that successfully, you can be a good team for a long time in this league.
Yeah, for sure. I think obviously a sport, I'm not very knowledgeable on hockey, but I can imagine depth is more important there just because of the amount of line changes you go through.
True.
And sometimes in basketball, if you have a very fit team, you can depend on guys to sort of play 44, 46, even sometimes 48 minutes. Doesn't very happen very often, but you can sort of maybe push your luck that way. But it is one of the biggest importances, I think, to the success of the Raptors right now, just because their depth also changes the game plan on the floor and it forces the other team to always keep adjusting.
Milos Raonic here on Tim and Sid, just going through the NBA world. He is a big fan, also plays tennis. Milos, when you're in the middle of a match where you know the other guy is, you guys don't want to break on that day. And I think early on in a match, you can sense that early, right? When you're taking on a guy and you say to yourself, this is going to be a long day.
Yeah, you can, but also people have that kind of reputation. So you know even before a match that there's that guy that's there to the end.
So the comparison I'm making here, though, is when another team goes up against Kyle Lowry right now, the way he's playing, like, you know, it's going to take a lot to break him. Do you think that matters at a level like that?
Yes, it does. And I'll give you actually one tennis example of who the best, I think, tennis player in the world at manipulating and using that is Rafael Nadal. I think people go up against him on the warm-up tournaments at clay saying, okay, this is going to be tough. He's the greatest player of all time on clay. But come French Open time, it seems nearly impossible to most people to imagine, okay, I got to take this guy out in three sets. And that weighs on you. That starts weighing on you before the match, and it just mentally drains you eventually.
Milos Raonic here on Tim and Sid. I was talking to Michael Grange earlier, and Derrick Rose left another game early last night down in Denver with his injuries. How tough is it? I mean, we as professional athletes, you guys have your own standards. Never mind what other people say. You guys have your own expectations of yourself. How hard must that be for a guy like that, who's who knows he can play at an MVP level and right now doesn't trust what his body is telling him.
Yeah, it's a measurement also at the same time. You want your body to perform a certain way and it just isn't following you. And it's different in sports, I think, because in tennis, if your body doesn't hold up, that's it. The other guy goes through it. There's no sub for you. Whereas in basketball, you can sometimes ask yourself, okay, maybe if I'm not at my best, if I'm at my 80%, maybe the backup is a better option for the team and so forth. But I don't think that's really the concern on Derrick Rose's mind. I think for him is he's just weighing everything just because of the nature of the last 3 years with all the injuries. He's always asking him, okay, this pain that I'm having, is it a serious pain? Is it a typical pain that I will feel from naturally just playing a lot of games, especially since I haven't done that for a long time now? So I think he's questioning his body, and he's not sure necessarily always the answers he's getting. And for myself, I had a hip surgery in 2011. Every little itch I would feel in my hip felt like, oh, is this okay? Is this worrisome? And so forth. And only with time do you grow out of that.
How much time, Milos? How much time did that take?
Well, for me, it was pretty quick. But don't forget, I was told it would be about 4 to 6 months before I would get back. I got back in 10 weeks. I didn't have a single hiccup on my recovery process, so everything went smoothly. Whereas for him, I don't think it's been that smooth. He lost a year at one point, and then he lost another year after just a few games.
Played just the 10 games the following season.
Yeah, so it's really a difficult and a very different state that he's going through, because he has had to take a lot of steps backwards to try to get going forwards, and it's hard, especially he finished at the pinnacle, other than winning a championship with the team, he finished the pinnacle of your personal NBA career, winning an MVP award.
Yeah, and then you got to deal with all that. Milos Raonic here on Tim and Sid. I can only imagine what the media locally and internally in Chicago is like on this Derrick Rose discussion. Because it seems like there are guys even in the organization who don't know what to say at this point and they're getting a little frustrated. But I wonder, Milos, do you think a guy like that listens or reads or is on social media and is conscious of what's going on around him? Like, for instance, for you, like, how closely do you pay attention to what's being said around you?
You can't tune it out completely. It comes around. Everything comes around. The question is, do you allow it just to be a whisper you can take off, or do you allow it to feel like somebody's screaming it into your ear? It's really a personal thing. I think one of the toughest things is being in a Chicago market after a great person that played through so much like Michael Jordan. That's another big thing, another big calculation you got to sort of take on it, is the expectations they're getting, because I don't necessarily think they expected a Michael Jordan out of Derrick Rose, but they expected a glimpse or some kind of a smaller version of that of championships with him. And I think that's unfair, because he reached the top. He gave them what they wanted from him. And then everything's been downhill sort of from there. And when it starts going downhill a little bit, it starts snowballing. And really, to get it back, you have to, not saying you have to get back and win another MVP, but he's going to have to do something quite significant for people to forget, because Jordan came back pretty aggressively and pretty quickly every single time there was any doubt.
That there is no doubt. You're bang on. Milos Raonic here on Tim and Sid. All right, let's go back to the Raptors for a second. Who impressed you the other night watching him in person wearing a Raptors uniform that maybe you weren't, maybe surprised you a little bit?
Lou Williams, because I never saw him play before, was clean and strong throughout.
He seems like a smart player out there, doesn't he?
He's a smart player. He's crafty. He does a little bit of everything. And the one thing that he's very good at that you don't, that at least I don't see with sort of the way, I can't say I watch it with the basketball eye. I'm just saying how a tennis player would see it, just because of how our sport is structured. The one thing you see is he gets himself where he wants to be, and he plays with his strengths. You never see himself forcing himself, trying to pull off something out of a weakness. He makes sure he uses patterns. He believes in them and he sticks to them.
Milos, so and I can ask this. Sorry, go ahead.
That's a confidence thing.
Oh yeah, for sure.
In it, and it's and right now, obviously, he's at a high. I don't think he's been at in his career maybe to this point, but he's carrying through.
Milos Raonic here on Tim and Sid. Milos, what you just brought up is very interesting to me because playing to your strengths, you hear that all the time, regardless of what kind of professional athlete you are. But if you don't take some of your weaknesses and try and improve them in a live, when the bullets are live and it's a real environment, how do you get better? Like, I appreciate playing to your strengths, but at some point, you got to try out these other things when it matters most, right?
Well, there's 2 days to deal with it. The thing, let me give you a Milos Raonic life example.
Go ahead.
I can work on my back end for 2 months, and I go in a match, and I'll start maybe hitting more back ends, and I'll start hitting it clear. But that's a completely wrong thing. My goal should always be to find the forehand. My forehand is going to win me matches. My backhand, no matter what I do with it, is not going to be the deciding factor. It's about maybe improving it so I can give more space to my forehand. But I know that serving and my forehand is what's going to win for me. And I think it's about improving your strength to sort of give you more possibility and maybe improving your weaknesses to find those strengths more. But you got to know what's going to win for you.
But it's I completely appreciate what you're saying, but it's also a situation. I mean, I can look at a team like the Packers. If they set up the run at all early in a game, the other side's dead because Aaron Rodgers is just going to have a field day, and you have to respect the run. If you even establish that backhand at any point early, that changes the whole dynamic of the match, doesn't it?
It does. It just makes your opponent think a bit more. It gives them a thought process. But I would never say go to your weakness in that big moment. I say maybe that's something to make your opponents think and make them maybe give them an extra fear. But I don't think that's the way, that's the thing you go to. For example, for me, I don't go to try to win the point with my backhand when I'm down break point. It's about hit a good serve and find your forehand. And that's what it's always going to be. Because maybe I'll get away with it 2, 3, 4, 5 times and maybe I'll do it for a while, but it's not what's going to sort of get me through the ups and downs of a career. And especially in basketball, having to play 82 games, it's about just trying to, I believe it's about trying to simplify and go back to what your basics are.
Do you think, Milos Raonic here on Tim and Sid, how big is patience in that moment? Because I'm sure there are times, especially in the last 12 months, where you're making big time inroads and you're getting to places you haven't been before. And maybe in hindsight, you're thinking to yourself, you know what, if I would have stuck with the backhand for a couple more games, maybe it would have it done me a greater service, let's say, in a fourth set. Do you ever look back at a moment like that, say maybe a little bit more patience on my weakness to try and establish that would have been more prudent, or do you just ignore that?
You do, and it's just, for myself, it's just the way I have a mentality. I sort of, every time I do something where I reach a point, I look back at it, good or bad. I have to look back at exactly how I did things. I put a sort of a calculation into it and be like, okay, what do I need to do for next time? Different or the same? And then I try to make the most of things that way. But the thing is, when you go out there, you have to make the decisions on your own and what you believe. Because when there is any slightness of doubt, that's when things get a lot more difficult very fast. Because you can get away sometimes with doubt, but when it really counts, especially if you're going to have to play a team and beat them 4 times out of 7 in playoffs, you're going to have to do that with your weapons. You're not going to get by somebody 4 out of 7 games with sort of trying to make your weaknesses carry you through.
But a playoff series at the level of the NBA, Milos Raonic here on Tim and Sid, a playoff round, and what you do day in and day out, they're both kind of messed up because all you're seeing is adjustment. Whether it's in the team sport, like you're going to have a great set and the other guy's going to adjust and vice versa. And it's just around and around we go. And it's just that's what is really difficult about what you do professionally. That's what's most difficult about being a head coach in a 7-game series, regardless of the sport. It's just you are constantly fighting the counter move if anything goes well. And that's what separates the good from the great, I would assume.
Exactly. You can ask many players that have played Mr. Federer. He approaches. There's a lot of times you'll play him and you'll be like, okay, he did this against me last time. Let's try to sort of put him in this situation again. He'll do something very different. And that's definitely helped out his longevity over almost 15 years now.
Do you always call him Mr. Federer?
No, I don't.
Okay, I just thought it was kind of cool when I heard it, and I didn't know how long, but it's completely acceptable, obviously, if you did, because he's...
Maybe
he's,
after two sets of twins, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you, because that's as tough as anything.
That's a bigger accomplishment than 17 slams.
Yeah, definitely. Not that I'd know, but that's a big accomplishment. Milos Raonic here on Tim and Sid. Milos, who or what in the NBA right now do you admire the most?
Greg Popovich. It's I think the leadership he's shown and the way he's brought a team together. He's brought players, made them very good. But he's what I feel is like he's instilled that once a player gets good, he gets the player to believe in, I got to be good at this role. I don't need to take over the game, but I have to be good at this role for the team. And I think that's why you see the most selflessness on that team more than any other team. And that's why I think they are overall the best team as a whole of this new millennium and the most consistent. And I think it's because of that. He's instilled that you will be the best player at your role. And I think he's allowed players to grow, but players have that desire to be the best in their position, and he's manipulated players into working out the best things for me and putting their egos aside. And it's tough with top athletes to do this, because we fight very hard every day to try to improve at something, and at one point it gets to a point where we think we know everything, and you need somebody to sort of put you on the right side of things and make you understand, yes, you might think you know that, but let's do things right.
Milos Raonic on Tim and Sid. And what you just said about buying into roles, I think that's what people around here are really excited about the Raptors, because you look at how they're broken down right now. There's no confusion.
Yeah, it's solid from every angle. Everybody knows what they need to do, and they're doing it. The most impressive thing I would say, the mind seems clear of the team. Obviously, that's easy when you're winning. You're 12-2 to many players that haven't been in that situation before. So things are just flowing. But when you have that clarity of what you need to do, how to do it, the execution just comes a little bit easier. And it's not going to be like this for another, 68 games?
Yeah, there's a few games left.
Yeah, it's not going to be like this. It's the truth of the fact. It's going to go up and down. But every single night they play, they don't need to be the best team in the league. It's that simple. They just need to be better than the team they're facing.
That is correct.
Doesn't matter how you win. Doesn't matter if you got to sort of fight dirty, change your game plan a bit or whatever it is. But you just got to be better than the team ahead of you. It's not about being the best team in the league for 82 games.
Milos Raonic here and Tim and Sid. Milos, yesterday was the Raonic Race for Kids event. Walk us through it. How did it go, and where can people find out more about it?
Yeah, it was a great event. My foundation, the Milos Raonic Foundation, alongside Tennis Canada's foundation, mine specifically focusing on kids with physical difficulties. We had a fundraiser doing some obstacle courses. We had great celebrities come out. From tennis players like Frank Dancevich, we had Strombolopoulos out, we had Patrick Chan out, and many others, Olympians, athletes. Rob Foles was out.
Robbie Foles, love me some Rob Foles.
He sweat through his shirt. He was intense.
That'll happen. He's
sweat
a big.
Through his shirt.
He's a big man.
He had to change on stage and just a little bit to the side, almost in front of everybody, but he was dealing with it like a champ.
Sorry, he nearly changed his shirt in front of people is what you're telling me.
Well, he went to the side of the stage, but he was a champ.
But you could see everything.
I wasn't looking.
Okay, because if you saw it, you can't unsee it, if you know what I mean.
I wasn't looking.
Okay, good
that's
for you.
That's
a vet move. Vet move, Milos.
And everybody had a great time from playing archery, bowling, all these sort of different kind of games. We raised a great amount of funding. And the past 2 years, I've specifically focused on kids with prosthetic devices. And 2 years ago, we opened up the Milos Raonic Agility Clinic, which was to help kids when they're getting new devices or when they're new to their device or when they've outgrown their previous one. It's a clinic happening weekly to help them be active and find a comfort with that device. And then we also helped 2 years ago to fund the research for a low-cost prosthetic knee for kids in third world countries. And this past year, we focused specifically on activation clinic, not just for kids with physical difficulties, but also kids that should be more active than they are. And it's great because it helps out in two ways for the kids with the physical difficulties. It helps them out physically, they become more active and they're able to participate in more things. But I think the social aspect and the confidence of all that just gives them a lot more belief in many things. So we've done great things. We're going to continue to do great things. And we're really just trying to touch as many kids and change as many opportunities as we can.
It's a fantastic cause, Milos. Congrats for all the work you've done with it and continue to do with it.
Thank you.
Finally, before we let you go, we appreciate your time. In one word, describe the season you had in 2014, and in one word, describe what you want to do in 2015.
Good season, 2014. I believe it can be much better in 2015. So I don't know one word.
Those were good words.
I'm
I'll take
a numbers
them.
Guy, not a words guy. So
okay, how about this? How about this? You're a numbers guy.
Yes.
How many wins are you setting the bar for in 2015? Tournament wins.
Ooh, let me tell you this. I could win four of the smaller events, and it could not mean nearly as much if I can find a way to win a Grand Slam. So it matters where the wins are.
Okay. It's just, you know what, I want to ask you all these questions, but you are in a tough business, friend.
It is.
You have some big dogs around you that know how to do it too. So, people look at you and they might expect this and that and the other. I was going to ask you about five other things, but you got some good players around you too.
It is. It's a great time to be a part of tennis, but there's no lack of belief in what I know and what I believe I can do and what I believe I will improve for next year, because there's a few specific moments. I'll put it straightforward. I made semis at Wimbledon this year, and it is the highlight of my career to this date. But also it's the most painful part of my career to this date. So it's how you look at things. I believe I can do much better, and I got the right team around me. I think I am going to do much better.
Well, next summer you got another shot at it, and we'll be watching.
Exactly. Here's my question for you.
Hold on, you're going to ask me a question.
Name the MVP on the Raptors. Doesn't have to be a player.
Name the MVP on the Raptors.
Yes.
Three words. Masai Ujiri.
I completely agree with you.
There you go. Once again, Sid and Milos on the same page.
I love that answer, I got to say.
I agree. By the way, when they hit the playoffs in April, and if they get into May, rack my brain on the scheduling. Is there a Grand Slam around there? Like, can you?
Yes,
is there any
there
shot
is.
You can
if,
come home for that?
And I believe if their finals of the East around that time starts the French Open.
You are budgeting the Eastern Final. That I love.
Yeah,
that
no,
I love.
But this year there is a beauty. If the Raptors are in the finals of the NBA championship, I don't know which game it would start. I think because there is an extra week this year between French Open and Wimbledon, I could squeeze my way back.
You would have to.
I would have to.
You don't have a choice at this point, right? Like
I don't.
You need to. You're gonna be courtside.
I haven't lost a game that I've come to, so I'm on good number.
But no hokey television timeout things with tennis rackets. They made Genie do that a couple of weeks ago. Was that one of the games? Don't do that stuff. If you're going to watch the game, tell him, listen, God bless everybody. I'd like to watch the game.
Exactly.
Right? Like, but that's a completely rational request because you are a huge, you're not just there because you're off. You are a huge Raptors fan. Leave you alone and let you watch the game.
But if there's any way, honestly, I'm the kind of fan, if there's any way I can help, I would.
So this guy.
Short of sticking my leg out and maybe tripping somebody on the big fun.
There you go. Milos, this was fun. Have a good one.
Thank you very much.